Alessandra, for the Science of Life conference, you just asked me to talk about birth, and that as a sequel to having talked about the Science of Life conference, having also now addressed the science of health as a direct topic, and having talked about people in the conference realizing that they are a center of health, and that they're actually creating centers of health. And in that previous recording, I talked about how they together form a center of integral healthcare by connecting them all up. And as Coral said, it is a process of being a midwife in a transition, as she beautifully describes in her latest recording and previous recordings as well. And also, as has been described by Blue Star and Olu and others, we are always dealing with these transitions in our understanding. Olu talked about how the African understanding can be a catalyst to open up the Western understanding at a deep level of depth and encompassment which has not been addressed before. And talking about that in the context of birth and birthing, it is a bit like the little joke of the twins in the uterus talking about is there life after birth? Because there's a very good reason to doubt if there is, because nobody ever came back to tell about it. And in that sense, a lot of people are stuck in a misconception about birth and death. As Jaap van der Wal so clearly expresses, why is death not simply a birth into the next level? And once you look at it that way, you can see that birth and death are simply like good and evil, or yes and no, or true and false. They're the different sides of the door, and you will call the side true or false depending on which direction you're going. So if you're in the house and spring comes and you are going out to enjoy the weather, then going to the outside is true and staying inside is false. However, if autumn comes and the storms come and you need to escape from the weather, then entering into the house is true and staying outside in the hail and the sloshing rain is false. And that is also the pivot point where I entered into that whole exploration in my research, when in engineering school I started my own studies next to theirs and discovered this fourfold dynamic logic of yes, no, maybe, and don't know, which essentially connected to the studies I was doing about waves and wave crest, that on the one side of the wave you could call it yes, the other side of the wave you would be calling no. The wave crest itself you would need to be calling yes and no, because the boundary is the separator and the connector. And then the ocean itself would be not yes and not no, because it's not a wave, but yet it is the carrier of the wave. And in that sense, you can then open every gate. And one of the phrases I coined in that respect was, the walls of hell are the gates of paradise. The only thing you need to be able to do is to do that quarter turn, so that instead of looking at the boundary, you do the quarter turn and you step onto the boundary. Because then you can see that the boundary is the connector. It's as if you step on the surfboard, or if you compare it to the image of the labyrinth. If you're walking in the labyrinth, then it's all difficult and disconcerting. But if you jump on the walls that separate the corridors of the labyrinth, everything is easy, because you see how the walls connect everything and how you can leap from wall to wall and go to the center or away from it just as you like. So by realizing that the boundaries are not the obstacles but the passageways, then you can also understand that the black hole is the white source, and that the moment of death is the moment of birth. And then you can also realize that having experienced birth already, why fear death? And actually, if you look at the history of the religions, for example, the religion of Christianity, there they used wine, and they used the magic mushroom caps, which is the remnant of which they still have in the form of the host, which they can serve out in the mass. But they didn't use the mushroom cap anymore. They didn't use the rye. The rye actually had the ergotamine, which is the foundation for the LSD. But instead, they use plain flour, which doesn't do anything. So they killed the ritual by making the transformative, the catalytic agent, impotent. But if you realize that it was about the wine and the mushroom cap, then you also understand that the church mass is simply a dried out, desiccated residue of the orgies, and that in the orgies people would have the wine and the mushroom cap or the hashish and go into their collective trance with yes or no sexuality as part of the story, because of course orgasm is a very cleansing, blockage resolving agent. And if you have enlightenment individually in a group collectively, then automatically you get the blockages out of your system, but also out of the social system. And when people are not stuck in their beliefs and diseases, then they automatically live in health. And what we call health within us, we call peace between us. And so these orgies were moments of birth to, or let's call it a moment of reset, in which individuals in society could reconnect to society and could reconnect into a mutual understanding, appreciation, experience, shared wisdom, and shared enlightenment, a shared experience of the universe within us. And that is different from what most religions offer, because they only talk about it. And in my more recent understandings, I think that that's what the Cathars actually were doing. And I have my suspicion that the Catholic Church exterminated the Cathars, because the Catholics could only talk about it and the Cathars were actually doing it. And of course that's very bad advertising if people can go elsewhere to get the real product instead of just a picture of the brochure. Our life is much about that, and that in the womb we have a possibility for what can be, and then we go to this big crunch of the birthing process, painful for the mother and the baby, and then out comes this young born baby into the world. At the moment of birth, the baby, which has been squeezed like a sponge, and actually the fluids have been pushed out of the brain, out of the lungs, out of the gut, the whole body has been pushed through this ring pass knot, and compressed and emptied out from inside. And then once outside, this big inhale takes place, not only of the air, but also of the vibrations of the earth, the electromagnetic vibrations of the sun, the rhythms of the planets. That's why it is the moment of birth in astrology, because that's where we then listen to this ongoing song of the planets in their position around the earth, and the way the sun broadcasts that as solar waves and solar flares towards us. And from that moment on, we live in that bath of cosmic radiation, of air, of atmosphere or water on the Earth. So we live in this alchemical setting as creators in creation. And in that alchemical setting, we there are born into an environment of Earth, which we experience as humans. And humans are animals with a memory which can't be edited. We have a capacity to edit our memories, and we can actually, through the language and through tools, communicate with each other and interact with the Earth in ways that many other animals cannot do. So by having a language and technology, we can communicate better with each other, we can interact with the Earth in more manners, but we are still animal. As animal, once we are born into this environment with of territories, a territory where we sleep, a territory where we walk the Earth, explore, discover, and find food, then the territory of the dinner table where we eat the food, and then the territory of letting go of the food, and then back to sleep. And that what we experience as animal actually is something which we experience already at the vegetative level. For a tree, it is different because the tree doesn't move from territory to territory. The tree is actually immersed in a circulation of the season. So there is a season of hibernation, the sleep cycle. There's a season of the spring, the exploration, the looking out, the finding of the food, the cross-pollination. Then there is the season of the maturation, the flowering, the fruit, the being in essence and presence, and the present of the being. And then there is the season of the letting go, the letting of the falling of the leaves, and the falling of the fruit, and the disseminating of the seeds, and back into hibernation. What the plant experiences around, the animal experiences that within, because the blood circulation does the counterpart of the flow of the seasons. And that what we have as a vegetative system within us, where the seasons and astrology and the rhythms of the environment sort of massage us in the different stages of our vegetative being, at the core of it we have the seed of or the cell or the bindu, and that seed is actually much more fundamental, because the seed in the soil is where the animal, where the plant comes from. Or the seed as the egg is where the animal comes from, but the seed in us is what came from the universe. When people ask what came first, the chicken or the egg, it is always the egg, because the chicken comes from the egg, the snake comes from the egg, the ant comes from the egg, the universe comes from the egg, because as Lawrence Edwards showed, if something turns inside out on itself, that produces a vortex. Inside of the double vortex there will be a torus. Our body is a torus. From mouth to anus there is this pipeline, and we are just a donut around it. And the universe as a whole is that egg shape, where everything can turn inside out on itself. So in our being, our birth is essentially that moment of the turning inside out on itself, when we go from one phase to the other. First there is the merging of the sperm with the egg, and that's a long-lasting process. Essentially that starts, if you look at where birth starts, then it is the sperm and the egg coming together, and actually the sperm is launched together with its lunch package of bicarbonates of soda to neutralize any acid environment, plus also sugars to have lunch on the road. And then these sperms, couple million, millions, they travel together in the same way that cyclists do their race. There's one at the top, and then somebody else comes and leads the top, and somebody else comes and leads at the top. There's always somebody who shows that it is possible to go faster to inspire the rest. And for the egg as well, there is a couple of million, and then in a 4-hour lasting process, the sperm are resonated, tuned, rhythm calibrated, and the sperm which is most resonant can then enter. At that moment, the egg goes from liquid crystal to crystal liquid. It freezes over. No other sperm can enter, and the selected sperm, the nuclear head of the compacted DNA, merges with the hyperextended DNA of the egg in the liquid environment. Those two resonant frequencies need to calibrate. So these two half DNAs, these two half humans, then merge to become the foundation of a new hologram for a new human. And that hologram is already contained within the first cell. It then is the tuning fork for the cell to unfold. So the moment of birth was already when that sperm was invited to enter into the egg, after which the egg closed. And then was the sperm dead for the rest of the peloton, of the rest of the group? Of the sperm, yes, seemingly it was. The other sperm, they don't have a role in that specific fertilization process anymore. Are they dead for the world, or are they simply a message that can now be discarded because the information has been passed on in the best possible way? And then when the DNA of the sperm and the DNA of the egg merge, is that the moment of birth? Because it's only at that moment that two half stories, two half humans can form a human. And then once that DNA is formed, it becomes a funnel, it becomes a vortex by which faster than light can be slowed down to light, and the faster than light can become the ultraviolet light that fills the cell, which can then resonate in the cell and become longer and longer wavelengths until it goes out of the cell as the infrared, and that's by which the cells can then communicate. And then when the cells communicate with this infrared environment, which is the quantum field parceled out in the letterbox side of the infrared, so intracellular it will be ultraviolet, extracellular it will be infrared, and compare that to the viral side of microbiome communications in the ultraviolet, and the microbial side of the microbiome communication is in the infrared. So in that body, at that moment of birth, is then also that the faster than light goes into the flux funnel of the DNA, the hologram projection, as Peter Garayev explained, that then projects the light field around the DNA with the infrared, and then from the cell out, that infrared is broadcast between the cells after the cells have divided again and again and again. So it's the moment of birth when that first cell actually implodes on itself, and the materials evaporate, the materials dissolve, the molecules evaporate, and the atoms discharge, and then boff, the cell bounces back as two cells. Is that the moment of birth? Because that moment of birth is in nowhere, because the material has dissolved into the molecular has dissolved into the atomic has gone back into phase space, so then birth takes place in phase space. It takes place in the quantum field. It takes place in the immaterial. So then birth takes place from the immaterial and forms those two cells which form the whole body. And then between the cells, the infrared is their means of communication. But as a result of that holographic pulsation in the ultraviolet within the cells and in the infrared between the cells, same hologram, just different tranche of it, then the cells between them, they move in that dance of that light field, and that then is the phonon field that Henk talks about. So the photon field in the immaterial has then been transcribed into the phonon field of the music in the body. And the music in the body is then that that trance dance of the body as it develops in the womb, from one cell to a couple of cells, and then when the 64 cells, it turns inside out. That's the where the morula, which is like a bramble, turns into a blastula, which is like a berry. So first there's this cluster of little balls, like a bramble, and then it turns inside out on itself and forms this blastula. It has this coating around itself, like a soap bubble. And is that the moment of birth? Because that's the moment that it starts to define itself within its environment. But when that cell has formed, that is basically still traveling from the moment of conception at the fimbriae, at the oviducts, and next to the ovipositor, next to the gonads of the female. But maybe we need to even look at the egg side of the story. I talked about the sperm with their bicarbonates and their sugars and their mutual support, but when they go into the body of the female in the vagina, they have four kinds of movement. They have a swimming movement, they have a corkscrew movement, they have a flip-flop movement, and they have a rest mode. But all of these movements are indicated by the body of the female. So the sperm simply follow the rhythm presented in the vagina of the female, and as a result they then make that movement accordingly, and as a result they can meet the egg. But the egg itself has its story similar, like at the moment that the eggs emerge, a bit like this story of the Greeks, where the dragon teeth are sewn onto the beach and all of these dragons come out simultaneously. Every month there are a dozen eggs that are being produced, but they in a way turn on each other, and talking about macho behavior, and then the egg that comes out of that, maybe two, they cross out, and every time they cross a border, that's the birth of that egg cell. It goes from one domain to the next, to the next, to the next. And as it goes out of the layers of the cells and of the capsules of the cells and out of the oviduct, every time it sheds a protein strand, in the same way that microbes going from one territory to the other, they communicate what they have experienced to each other via protein strand. In mathematics, you would call it residue vector. In biology, you would call it the survival information package. And so the cell that comes out of the ovipository is then dropped into the cavum douglasii. It's the internal bottom of the pelvis of the female, and it has ocean water of the quality of a couple of million years ago. So basically our birth from the side of the egg is by dropping into the ocean, and then in that ocean being rescued by this anemone tentacle of the fimbriae at the end of the oviduct, which then picks up the egg and keeps it there, because that is where the sperm then comes, and is the moment of birth then that the sperm and the egg arrive, and that's before that moment of the sperm getting into the egg, and that's before the moment of the DNA merging with the other DNA, and that's before after that then comes the moment of the cell turning inside out on itself, that moment of birth in phase space where the cell collapsed in itself and comes back as two cells. And that is before the moment that the cell as morula blastula then comes into the womb and nestles itself in the womb and sort of half nestles itself in the womb. And is that the moment of birth? Because that's where the cell then puts itself in the earth, so to say. The seed goes into the earth to be able to grow and transcend out of it. And in that process, there is that division of the growth of the fetus on the one side and the growth of the placenta on the other side. And the placenta is basically, say, a localized organ system, like a large liver plus much more, for the fetus. So that the fetus is only half of what you are, and the placenta, in Bali they call it the brother, is the other half of what you are. So are you then in a way already born because there's two of you? And then at the moment of birth, there will be only one of you that actually steps out into the world, and the other stays behind because it was the scaffolding, the launching platform, the transformer by which what happened in the body of the mother was filtered and prepared and produced for you as a baby body in the uterus to be born. And then the moment of birth comes and you step out into the world, and as somebody said, and then I knew the bastard meant business. And that was a woman who re-experienced her own birth and discovered that from the comfort and the quietness and the softness of the womb, has suddenly there were these glaring lights, these noises, and these narcissistic tensions of the doctors around, inflicted on that new body, together with all these rhythms of the planets and all the rhythms of what's going on Earth. And of course, as she formulated nicely, and they meant business, it is all for the money. Because if you compare that birthing process with what the Druids would do, where there would be one woman giving birth and say six women around who have already given birth, the body of the woman giving birth is in resonant entrainment with those other bodies around. But the other bodies around, they don't scream, they don't shout, they are not nervous. They know exactly what's going on. They empathize fully with what's going on. But they realize that there is nothing of importance going on because the body has been doing that for millions of years. Giving birth is not something we do individually, but collectively. And the knowledge of giving birth is not something that you eat with a fortune cookie, but it is built into your body already long beforehand, throughout the generations. So throughout the generations, women have known how to do that. They know how to do it by themselves, like any other animal. So if the woman is by herself in the forest, the baby will come. You don't need a hospital, you don't need doctors, you don't need glaring lights. You don't need to pay for it. And so the moment of birth itself is very much dependent on what kind of culture you're in, what kind of environment you're in, what kind of belief in technology that you're succumbed to, and also what kind of superstition such as money you are immersed in. If you look at birth and birthing over the world, that then you can see that every culture has its own understanding. In the West, it's very much more at doctor's convenience. The woman's put on her bed with her legs up so that the doctor can look in, standing at the foot of the bed for the doctor's convenience. And in the other cultures, they know that it needs to be the mother's convenience. So she's in a bath, or she's suspended in a sling that she can sit in a hocker, and that the baby can just with gravity assistance can just slide down in the direction of gravity. So that understanding that the birth needs to be for the convenience of the mother in her being suspended, or the convenience of the baby for the birth taking place underwater, those are all cultural perspectives. The principle is still the same. There's a boundary, and you cross from one side of the boundary to the other. And what I realized in four-dimensional dynamic logic, a boundary is simply a place where something reflects. If you bounce a ball against a wall, it bounces back, and you know the wall is there. If the wall were invisible, if the ball bounces back, you know there is a wall. If the ball doesn't bounce back, you know there is a field. The field and the boundary are the opposite of each other, in the same way that the wave and the ocean are the complement of each other as well. And once you understand that, then you can understand that the transition of that boundary, the birth, is simply the capacity to rotate through that boundary. Einstein had the notion that you cannot go through the barrier of light, but that's basically because he used a reduced, simplified version of a light beam. Had he included the wave envelopes and had he understood that it is a wave soliton, then he would understand that at the edge of the light beam, the light beam propagates itself. So it propagates itself at the frequency of the light that Einstein was looking at, but also at the frequency of the higher harmonics and also at the frequency of the soliton. So it simply means that if you want to go through the boundary, you need to do the opposite of that bounce back. So instead of bouncing back, you need to corkscrew, invert that rotation to go through the wall, through the boundary, through the barrier of light. And then you can see that going through the barrier of light is not different than going through the barrier of sound. You can see that going through the barrier of sound is no different from diving through a wave on the beach. And then you can see that more interesting than the wave on the beach and the barrier of sound and the barrier of light is the barrier of consciousness. Because in the barrier of consciousness, most often you hold yourself back and prevent yourself for the real birth. And the real birth is that you then go to the other side of consciousness and dive from the known to the unknown, dive from being Jesus to being Christ, transit from going to what you know to what you don't know, leaving memory to go back to intuition. And then that moment of birth is probably the core of every moment of birth. Because that moment of birth, when you go through the barrier of consciousness, is actually where you go through the edge of the barrier of light, as Einstein described it, which is actually going through that pivot point of the barrier of sound. And Henk described that as it is the point where the pentatonal system, which is like a spiral staircase from one floor to the next in the building, needs to match up with the octave system at that ladder going from one floor to the other in the building. And as Henk said, that's where the Pythagorean comma is relevant, because the spiral staircase and the ladder must end up at exactly the same space for that octave note to be put in place. Because it's not just that it is the eighth note of the musical scales, but it's also the eighth node in the wave dynamic. And as Bill Tiller explained, in the zero point there can't be fluctuations. In music they call that the Pythagorean comma. And if there are fluctuations in that node, in that note of the octave, then there can be a slight mismatch in going from one octave to the next, from one wave band to the next. And so if you want to go through that moment of birth, you really want to do the moment of birth, not in the way Einstein looked at it, as having a wave train of only one type of waves with zero points in between, with the end point, which is then the moment of the birth that we are discussing now. But you also need to include all the wave envelopes and the whole soliton, because then that moment of birth is not just birth into the next repeat of what was before, or the next repeat of what could have been before, all of these wave envelopes, but it's actually the rebirth, not of the wave envelope, the soliton, which was before, with the soliton of what can come next, but also the moment of birth of not just going from the wave which was before to the wave which was next, or the wave train which was before to the wave train which can yet come, but from the understanding that the wave node at that point is actually the whole wave train which was and which will be. And that's the moment of the now, the moment of birth in the now, in the present, where the past, which is the wave train before, can turn into the future, which is the wave train that comes after. But more important, that it is where the past and the future are in the now connected, and in the now are this new hologram of this new soliton, which encompasses two wave trains, the one of the past and the one of the future, in a new wave train, which is much larger. So the birth is not just going through the limit into a new environment, but it is also a limit, passing a limit of restraints into a new potential and to a new domain of creation. And that is that moment of birth, when you realize that every moment in the now here, that's why my email address is always now here, now here at, that at that moment of now here, you do have the choice. And as Roberto Renou said, il faut forcer le choix. At the moment that you have the feeling that you do not have the choice, you are simply ignoring that there must be a choice. In mathematics, you can see that very clearly. You have this mathematical domain with an x-axis, a y-axis, and a z-axis, and a zero point. But if you add 3 to anything, then that zero point can be shifted. That means that every place, every point, everywhere in that domain, you can have a zero point. So if you do not see a choice, you need to add 3 or subtract 3 or multiply by 3, divide by 3, and you need to move the zero point to somewhere where you can reach it. And then when you have that zero point back in reach, you have that moment of choice. And that's the moment that you can do the opposite of what circumstances dictate. When Simple Simon says that you should do this, you can simply conclude, no, you have no business with Simple Simon, and you can do something else. And that is the moment where you then realize that you are the pivot, the fulcrum of Archimedes, that you're at the position that you can change the whole universe, you can change your whole reality, and you actually are aware that it might mean that your body would die in there where you are, because in being that change, your body might have to be sacrificed, because in making that change, you're actually not making the change in the physical reality, but you're doing exactly the same as the cell when it replicates from material to molecular to atomic, and then in phase space it bounces back, because your moment of choice is in phase space, your moment of choice is in the quantum domain, your moment of choice is in flipping a quantum, as Tetrionics describes it. So your moment of birth, every moment of birth, is in that flip of the quantum in the quantum domain. And so I'm very well aware that I'm no longer talking up the moment of birth of coming out of the womb, for the simple reason that that was just one moment of birth, but before, when the placenta was being split off from you, that was a kind of birth as well. before, when the sperm and egg came together, that was a moment of birth as well. When just after the DNA of the egg and the DNA of the sperm came together, that was a moment of birth as well. When the egg came out of the oviduct and shot off this polar body, that was a moment of birth as well. So every time there is that moment of birth, when there is that transition from one domain to the other, and in all of these transitions, the body around it is different. So it was a sperm on the one side, it was an egg on the other, then it was a sperm and the egg together as a zygote, so the body, instead of two bodies, it became one body. The body then split up with the fetus and the placenta. Then it became a body walking the earth. But that what created that body was the DNA, which was already created by the ancestors. So the moment of birth is not just your moment of birth, or rather the moment of conception is not just the moment of your conception, but it also contains the moment of conception of all of your ancestors. And that's where, in that metaphor of the light line of Einstein, had the wave node of the one wave in the ray of light, and the next wave node and the next wave node had the one moment of conception, the previous moment of conception, the previous moment of conception. All of them come together. And what Einstein didn't see, but what in the ancestors you can see, every time the number of ancestors doubled. So there's not just that wave that every time you need to have two ancestors, but also that wave envelope that every time there's four of their ancestors that come into play, and eight of theirs, and so on. So that you are always a cell in the body of humanity. So when you're born, humanity is reborn. And that, of course, changes the perspective, because then your birth is the rebirth of humanity. And when Christianity talks about the rebirth of the sun in the 21st of December, actually it's the rebirth of the sun, the star, on the 21st of December. And the same at Easter, it's the return of the spring coming after winter. And those are seasonal cycles. And birth is a cycle. And when you understand that the cycles are all interconnected, and in topology, you see that if you, in topology, you look at the sphere, it will have a north pole and a south pole, because the sphere will need to connect to the environment. The sphere is not just a ball, it has a starting point and an ending point implied in it as well. And every circle is connected to every other circle. And in the whole universe, everything is connected. And in the quantum geometry, you can see that. Every tetrahedral quantum, which is a charge in motion with a magnetic wake, so that it looks like an equilateral triangle, but it evokes a vortex on one side and the other, so it's actually a three-dimensional element. But that triangle has its own circular dynamic with it, so it's a triangle, but it's also a circle. And all of these triangles, all of these circles are interconnected, so that in the quantum domain, in quantum geometry, you can see that every quantum flip, which is your moment of freedom of choice, or the moment of birth and rebirth as a creator in creation, is also connected to every other moment of choice and every other's moment of choice. So that's why Roger says that's also the domain of love, because everything is one. And once you go into that kind of understanding, then your moment of birth and your moment of death get a very different meaning, because if in your lifetime you have not discovered that you're a creator in creation, and that every time you have a choice, and if you cannot find a choice, il faut forcer le choix, you have to find a choice nevertheless, because you need to remember that you're a creator in creation. You're in contact with the quantum space at every time, and you can flip a quantum at every moment, so that you can change your involvement in the reality that you are into at every moment. And if you do not see that, if you do not discover that while you are alive, then you will discover that at the moment that you die. Because at the moment that you die, you will discover that your physical body was just a container in which your consciousness had a lever. It was the Archimedean handle on your participation in creation. And if you did not learn how to act as a creator in creation, if you did not learn to operate the magic of activating freedom of choice, then in the moment of death, your instrument of doing that on earth falls away, and you will discover that you always had that moment of being connected to the universe as a whole, because you'll fall back into that. In a way, you could compare it to a drop that falls into the ocean, and then when the drop falls into the ocean, you have these beautiful pictures that the ocean just spits that drop back up and out, and that drop hovering above that crater created by the fall of that drop in the ocean is your life as you live it until you fall back and dissolve in the ocean. A lot of cultures understood that, a lot of religions describe that, and all of it in our life experience is just learning how to live that. And of course, that's not a description. So what I have described now is simply the essence of life, which is also the essence of healing, that the part is always connected to the whole, but that it is necessary to see that the whole is always connected in the part. The act of healing is the restoration of the whole in the part. To stop being egocentric, to stop being attached to things which have not been digested, to stop clinging to things that don't work, and to make space for the whole universe to be present within you, and to let go of anything within you that doesn't fit the universe as a whole. So you learn how to discern between heaven and hell. Heaven, that is how the universe works. Hell is all these memories which you cannot deal with, which you hide under the carpet, and which then interfere with your mind, your body, your soul, your spirit. And then the art of healing is to realize that these hidden treasures are actually not treasures, but blockages, obstacles. And then once you start to learn that, you start to learn to dissolve that, which means that you become a healer. Because once, of course, you can do that for yourself, you can also do that for others. And in a way, you could see that whatever you have not digested and what you have been hiding under the carpet is then something that got locked away. But how is that different from something that is waiting to be born? How is that from something in a uterus waiting for gestation? So if you call that hell and you call that the devil, then basically you keep it locked in. But if you connect up to it and help that undigested, undissolved, let's call it the problem or a devil, and bring it out, then that devil turns into an angel, because it got stuck in a way where it couldn't work, and then it can go to a place where it can work, and then you are the midwife of devils becoming angels. So you're the midwife of angels, and you're also the cleaner out of hells and the healers of devils. And all of it starts with realizing that anything you believe with might be a self-deception, and that you need to be able to kill the self-deception, lock it away, and then turn it around, do that universal principle of having the thing turn inside out on itself, so that you can see the other side of the story and say, okay, in this way it's the toxin, but the other way around it's the medicine. And then you are born to that deeper quality of healing, that you realize that there are no devils and there are no angels, there are simple moments of learning and discovery, and that life is about learning and discovery, and that every moment of death is also a moment of birth, every moment of birth is also a moment of death, and that it is not about birth and death, but about in that moment seeing how the whole in a glimpse can be seen in the part. And that's what so many mystery schools try to help people understand, that in those moments of transition, at the moment that you hear the clock tick, do you hear the creation of the universe? At the moment that you look at the teacup, do you see the river which formed the clay which you're holding in your hand? And that's also what Helena and others in the Science of Life group are trying to bring forward, that everything we see originated from something. It is the placenta, or it's the birth, or it is the object that came out, but what is the process from which it came? And that process, what transformation was it part of? And that transformation, how is that part of the universe? And then being a midwife is assisting in that birth. Seeing the birth is always seeing that something hidden becomes visible, and that there is something else going on which is much larger than that moment of birth, and that moment of birth gives you access to that much larger perspective. And I think that's also why a lot of people are hanging over the cradles of the babies, because the babies are still in touch with that until they're educated, so-called, and then taught to disregard that or disown that and disbelieve that, and they're already made dead instead of becoming fully alive. And that's also what I see what happened in science, when people started to look at the science of dead matter, that everything became dead, and deadness became the model of everything, and everything's compared to deadness. And by having a science of life, the birthing process, the midwifery of creation, being creator in creation, being conscious of that moment of cosmic conception in every quantum change, becomes visible again. And in the talk of the topic of healing and healing centers, and the realization that we are the healing centers, that's where that connection of healing and that application of magic, that instrumentalization of freedom of choice becomes really explicit. And that's where we can then actually see that we are giving birth to that other kind of understanding, where we know that the physical that we see, as Tetragon says, it is moved and it is formed from the quantum domain, but we can now look into the quantum domain, and by being able to do that, we can rediscover the quantum domain in us, operate freedom of choice, get rid of the obstacles, and give birth to health and healing and health centers. And that, of course, is a fantastic experience, when every moment of living is felt as vital, crucial, alive, and a new birth to something new that is being discovered. And most of that is you discovering you, specifically you discovering that you are the universe.